Hello, welcome to Reflections on the Scriptures. My name's Murray Shanks. Today I want to tell you about a certain young lady who lived in a corrupt and degenerate culture that was hell-bent on doing the wrong thing, yet she always seemed to do the right thing, and God blessed her for it. Her story, her life, has been an inspiration, speaking into the lives of millions of people across the thousands of years since she lived. This young lady is one of only two women in all of human history who were given the honour of having a book of the Bible named after them. That's pretty awesome, isn't it? Somehow this young lady impressed God by the way she lived her life. Now, if somebody seems to have impressed God by the way they have lived their life, I think we can learn something, we can all learn something, can't we, from their story. Would you agree? Who am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about Ruth. Today, I want to look at the story of Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, because I believe there is much the Lord wants to say to us through their story. So let's open the book of Ruth together. The opening words to this book are, in the days when the judges ruled. So in the days when the judges ruled, what's that all about? Well, you remember the story of how Moses brought the people out of Egypt. Eventually, after some 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, God brought his people into the land he had promised them. He told them to drive out all the people who were living in the land and they were to take possession of it. The trouble is that they didn't do as they were told. They were disobedient to God and they let many of the people stay. They thought to themselves, it's not so bad. They can be our labourers, our servants, our slaves. So the Israelites let many of them live with them. We read in Judges chapter 2, then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshipped various gods of the peoples around them. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Ashtoreths. So that's the background info. As I said, the story of Ruth begins in the days when the judges ruled. For the original hearers, they would have immediately understood what that meant. The nation, if you could call it that, was in a mess. And basically, everyone did what they liked. They no longer remembered the Lord. They had forgotten all that he had done for them in bringing them out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And now largely they ignored him and worshipped the idols of the surrounding nations. So that's the beginning of our story. There was a famine in the land. Work and food were in short supply. But there were food and work not that far away, just down the mountain range, across the Jordan River in the land of Moab. The story begins with a family, mum, dad, and two boys. The mother's name was Naomi and the father's Elimelech. Elimelech decided to take his family down from the town of Bethlehem, which is up in the mountains, down across the Jordan Valley and into the land of Moab. Not long after arriving in Moab, it appears that Elimelech came to grief and died. That left Naomi with her two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. To be a widow at this time was not good. A widow's life was very hard, but at least Naomi had her two sons to look after her. These boys soon married a couple of the local girls, Ruth and Orpah. But things were going to go from bad to worse. Within 10 years of arriving in Moab, both of her sons had also died. Things really could not have been worse for these three women, these three widows, just trying to survive. We need to remember that the girls would have been exactly that, girls. They would have been married at about 12, 13 years of age. Ruth and Orpah would have been around 20 years old when all of this was happening. Things must have been pretty bad because eventually Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." At this they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" People were amazed to see Naomi home again after all these years away. "Who is this young woman with her?" they asked. "Well, that'll be her daughter-in-law, Ruth. She too is a widow. A girl from Moab? A girl who chose to stay with her mother-in-law following her husband's death rather than returning to her own people? I mean, staying in Moab, Ruth could have remarried, I mean, amongst her own people, amongst her own culture. Surely life would have been just easier for her if she had stayed behind and simply let Naomi return to her own people alone. If the truth be told, Ruth was a refugee. Ruth chose the more difficult road. Orpah, the other daughter-in-law, well, initially she offered to stay with Naomi, but then when urged to return to her parents' home, she agreed and left. Not Ruth. Ruth made the more difficult decision. She chose to stay and to support her mother-in-law. She chose to become a stranger in a foreign land where she would most likely be rejected and mistreated for the rest of her life. She chose to make Naomi's God her God. She chose the Lord over her own people's idols, even though it was going to be far more difficult and dangerous for her. The two women arrived home just as the barley harvest was beginning. Now, like most people who lived pretty much anywhere on earth up until a couple of hundred years ago, harvest time was a big deal. I mean, there were only a couple of weeks in order to gather in the food for the coming months. It was all hands on deck. During harvest time, people literally worked day and night until they dropped. It was not uncommon for people to get maybe only 4 to 6 hours sleep a night during this period because there was just so much physical work which simply had to be done. Naomi and Ruth arrived home in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. It's important that we understand what was happening here. Christians of other centuries would have understood far more readily the situation that Naomi and Ruth wandered into when they arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the harvest. Without a home, a protector, or resources, this was a dangerous time for two women. Itinerant labourers were scattered throughout the fields working late into the night. A young woman from another country without a man to defend her was in very real danger of being raped or at best robbed. Yet Ruth knew that they needed food to survive. She needed to go and gather barley. There was a practice known as gleaning. It was a kind of social security for the poorest of the poor. The landowners would allow people to go over the crop once the harvest had been through, picking up any seeds that had fallen to the ground. It was hard work. And they didn't gather a lot, but it was enough for the two women to at least have something to eat. So as soon as they arrived, Ruth went out gleaning. This was all part of the law. God had written this into their law many, many years earlier. You know, I've seen homeless people here in Foster, where I live, gleaning, either picking up discarded cigarette butts to be relit for the last couple of drags or sifting through rubbish bins looking for leftovers. But that's a modern version of what Ruth was doing as she worked behind the harvesters. Now, living in Bethlehem at the time was a man of standing, a man of great wealth, a landowner by the name of Boaz. Boaz owned the field that was being harvested, the field where Ruth happened to be working. Verse 4 says, "Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. 'The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you,' they called back." Boaz seems like a nice guy, doesn't he? So often someone's very first words make the most lasting impression on us. These first words from Boaz, a wealthy and influential landowner from Bethlehem, tell us that he loved God and he wanted God's blessing on those around him, including those who worked in his fields. Did you hear the reply of his workers? "The Lord bless you," they called back. The workers knew something about this remarkable man. They knew that he loved God and they knew how he treated people. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" Well, the foreman replied, well, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I've told the men not to touch you. You think about it. You only tell the men not to touch the young foreign girl if you fully expect that they will. Boaz knew that these were dangerous times for a young girl, particularly a young widow from another country, and he used his power and his influence to protect her. Boaz had his eyes open. He looked beyond his own concerns and he really saw Ruth and Naomi's situation for what it was. He knew they needed protection, and he knew that he could provide that protection, and so he acted. He used his power and influence for good. I've told the men not to touch you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? And Boaz replied, I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. I want you to notice the way Boaz just naturally, as though he's been living like this for years, just steps into what God is already doing amongst them. He prays that God would richly reward Ruth and Naomi as they came to take refuge under the wings of God. That's what it says. So in reality, it was simply with God's people. If you read on, you'll discover that Boaz then invites Ruth to continue to gather food in his fields. He invites her to eat with his servants and even instructs his workers to ensure that there will be plenty of grain left for her to pick up. It didn't take long for the news to get around about what Ruth had done for her mother-in-law, Naomi. She'd acted in a very unusual way. She'd put another's needs ahead of her own needs. She'd come to live in a foreign land and was working hard to get what she needed to support both herself and Naomi. You know, I said to you earlier that I believe God wants to tell us something about the kind of people who impress him. What are the values that are important to God? And why did God put this little book in the Bible? Why did God allow this ancient story? And believe me, it is an ancient story. These events happened more than 3,000 years ago. Why did God allow this ancient story to stand the test of time? What does God want to say to us about Ruth and Naomi and Boaz? I think one of the key lessons that we learn from this story is that God is impressed with those who put the needs of others ahead of their own. More than 1,000 years after these events, the Apostle Paul wrote to Christians living in Philippi, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others." That's what impressed God about Ruth. And clearly it impressed Boaz as well. Back in Moab, when it would have been just so easy to just walk away from her mother-in-law, Ruth said, "No matter what happens, I will not leave you. I will stick with you through thick and thin. Whatever happens, we will be there together, you and me." Faithfulness. Ruth was faithful. And God loves it when we are faithful to him and to each other. Faithfulness is one of the qualities of God. To be faithful is to be like God. That's why for me, faithfulness is such an important quality, because it's important to God. You know, as a church leader, when somebody comes up to me and says, "Hey, Murray, I'd really like to join the worship team or do some preaching or lead a small group or join the diaconate or whatever," the first thing I ask myself is, how faithful has this person been up to this point in their walk with the Lord? It's very important. Have they been faithful in small things, like simply coming to worship regularly? Are they faithful to their friends? Are they faithful to the Lord when they're at school or work? Are they faithful when they're at home with their family? Faithfulness is so important, especially in small things, because it speaks volumes about your character. I'm going to speak a little more about character in a moment. The point is that faithfulness is very important to God. Ruth was faithful to Naomi, even when it was costly for her, and it impressed God. You know, Boaz was also faithful. Obviously, God had blessed him with great wealth and power. Boaz knew what that meant. With great wealth and power comes great responsibility. He knew God wanted him to use that wealth to bless others, and he was faithful in doing that. He was also being faithful in using his power, his influence, to protect and care for this very vulnerable refugee woman in their midst, Ruth. Let me ask you today, in what ways has God blessed you? In what ways may God be looking for you to be faithful with his blessing entrusted to you? God has called you to the position you now hold, whatever that may be. Are you being faithful to God's call on your life? Maybe God blessed you with popularity at school. You're a popular person, and therefore that means you have influence. That means that you can be a leader. You can lead people to do the right thing, to live the way God wants you to live. It may mean that you could stand up for someone who's not being treated well, or someone who's in some kind of danger, just like Ruth was. Maybe God's blessed you with a good mind, with skills and abilities in the workplace that just naturally give you an edge over others. The question for you is, how faithful are you being with those skills, those gifts from God? Maybe God has blessed you with financial resources. That gives you a certain degree of power and influence in our world. The question for you is, how faithful are you being with your wealth, with your God-given power and influence? How faithful are you being in using all of your gifts to serve the Lord and to bless others? Okay, back to the story. Ruth continued to go out every day and gather whatever she could from the fields where the harvesters had cleared. At the end of the harvest, only a few weeks later, Naomi came to Ruth and said, "This is what I want you to do. Tonight, Boaz will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he's finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he's lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. Now, winnowing the barley is the work that I've talked to you about before. It's the process whereby the chaff is separated from the grain. Ancient agriculture would take the grain to a windy place, chuck it up in the air, and the chaff would blow away, leaving the heavier grain to fall back to the ground. Because there was so much work to do, the workers would eat and sleep out at this spot, and Naomi knew that Boaz would be there for the night. It was a risky thing for the young girl to do. But it seems that Naomi took a chance on Boaz and Ruth's good character. By uncovering his feet and lying down at his feet, Ruth was really offering herself to Boaz as his wife. I want you to notice that what Boaz does here. I want you to notice the way that his character dictated his actions, more so than did his natural desires. It was the middle of the night. I mean, out in the country, a young woman, a woman who wasn't a virgin. Now remember, Ruth had been married before. She was sexually experienced, and she came to him in this way, and she smelt delightful. Everyone else would have stunk to high heavens out there, but no, Ruth was freshly bathed and perfumed, and she had on clean clothes. They lived in a time of Israel's history when it seems that few would have worried what Boaz did with this poor servant girl from a foreign land. Remember, Boaz is the boss. He is the most powerful guy in the place. I want you to notice that Boaz and Ruth did the right thing on all accounts. Verse 7, "When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. 'Who are you?' he asked. 'I'm your servant Ruth,' she said. 'Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer.'" What's the kinsman redeemer thing about? Well, at this time in this culture, because it was so hard for a woman if her husband died, there was a law given by God whereby the brother of the dead man was expected to marry his brother's widow and to have children by her. He would inherit any land that was owned, but any children that were born would be considered the children of the dead man. This was a way to ensure both the continuation of the line of the dead man and the care of the widow following the death of her husband. It seems to have worked pretty well as a type of social security net. "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You've not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you're a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am near of kin, there is a kinsman redeemer nearer than I. Stay here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until morning." Boaz was clearly a man of integrity. He wanted Ruth as his wife, but he realized that there was another who was a closer relation to Ruth's former husband, and he needed to be asked first. The thing is that this wasn't just about Ruth. As I said earlier, there was property involved that had originally belonged to Ruth's husband. In obtaining the land, the other relative would also have to marry Ruth. When this was put to him, he refused, and Boaz was able to marry Ruth. Both Ruth and Boaz did the right thing. The thing I want you to notice is that God blesses those who place their personal integrity, their personal holiness, above everything else. People who obey God, even when it seems that no one will ever notice. Even if they live in an age like we do, where few are concerned about the Lord. Remember, Boaz and Ruth lived in an age where everyone did their own thing. God is impressed with people who swim against the current. God is impressed with people whose main priority is doing what he wants, and people who protect, people who guard their character. I want to say to you today, young people, always protect your character. Middle-aged people, always protect your character. Older people, always protect your character. I've said this to you so many times over the years, and I'll keep on saying it. Your character is the sum of your habits. That's so true, isn't it? The sum of all the things that you do day to day, whether good or bad things, the way you relate to people, the way you use your time, the way you spend your money, the things you speak about, the things you joke about, the stuff you post online, add them all together, and that's pretty much your character. And you know what? Your character is most clearly seen when no one else is watching. Let me ask you today, how's your character going? When no one else is watching, how's your character? Remember, God is always watching, and your character is really important to God. One thing I've learned over the years is that your effectiveness in ministry, whatever ministry God is calling you to, and we're all called in some way, flows directly from your character. Good things follow good and right actions. I want you to notice how God blessed Ruth because she made good and right choices. Today, can I encourage you to maybe read for yourself the little book of Ruth? It's only a really tiny little book. And when you've done that, ask yourself, are you living the kind of life that impresses God? Are you living the kind of life that God would be pleased with? If you're not, with God's help, you need to do something about it. God bless you today and throughout this year as you serve him.